Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Couch Crunch Podcast. I hope everybody's enjoying their Christmas Eve. Have fun, guys, out there. Everyone enjoying the holidays. We're going to get into some The Boy and the Heron, actually. And we're going to be talking about this movie in particular because I definitely feel like this movie was really well done. And as an anime fan, I feel like it pays homage to the community, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, just like the growth of his career, Miyazaki, he's definitely a legend in the game as far as like film and animation in general. It is definitely held a legacy throughout the years.
Yeah,
see that this is possibly his last film. It all comes together so fantastically.
Now I'm new to his movies in general because I think I just checked out Spirited Away. It was a good movie, you know, the visuals, the story, the characters, like they were all well done.
Yeah.
A little bit of wonky, like for me, I always get confused with like the storyline, like the way he kind of tells the stories. But you know, I'm not familiar with like his movies, but I was told by you actually that Spirit Away was actually nominated for like a, was it nominated or was it, did it win actually like an Oscar? I think it did, right?
Yeah, it won the Oscar in the early 2000s, one of those award shows.
Yeah.
It's the first animated film to win an Oscar during that time. So it's a crazy achievement for him. Because typically it's mostly Western, you know, stuff in the States that win those awards most of the times. But it was undeniable at that time that Spirited Away took that away. You know, nobody could see past the glory of what that left behind the mark.
Yeah.
Pop culture in general, it was pretty crazy. Yeah, so he's going on in the States.
Yeah, it was like a different time era where it was, you know, I feel like movies like that can actually be mentioned in like the Oscar. Like, I don't know, it was a different time back then because I feel like animes now, like they wouldn't even give them the time of day to actually like be nominated for something in the Oscars. Like nowadays, completely different dynamic, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like just a one-time thing, it seemed like.
Yeah,
nowadays they just take like all these they don't really put much effort into animation for the category. It's like they just give it to Boss Baby or some throwaway animation that came out that year. But hopefully, I'm hearing that Boy and the Heron might be actually nominated this year for the Oscars. So who knows? Maybe he might be actually part of it again. That'd be kind of crazy to see.
Now I'm going to go ahead and talk about some things. I feel like the most thing that really drew me in, definitely the visuals. The visuals definitely looked like it was really up to par when it came to anime. Like, I felt like the motions, like, it's just, like, the way they move through the scenes, it just feels so lifelike. Like, when you look back, I feel like that's modern technology, as you could tell, like, when it comes to animation. But I feel like when you go back and look at some of the older animes, you can tell like how much fluently it moves. Like it actually, like the characters within themselves, like the movements within themselves are like characters itself.
Yeah, from what I know, this is like more traditionally done versus like, you know, the more modern way of doing things, how everything's more 3D and CGI.
Like AI and stuff.
Right, yeah, like Hideo Miyazaki, he's like known to do more traditional hand-drawn kind of storyboarding and the way his animations are, so it's, you can definitely tell in this. And it kind of, especially the opening scene, like with the flames of him going through to try to find his mother through the fire, it kind of reminds me of an anime that came out this year, Pluto. It's like this kind of like Shudder and sketchy style of like the way the animation was going while he was trying to run throughout the house and get escape out from the flames. It reminded me of like some of the parts in Pluto. If everybody's familiar with that anime that came out on Netflix.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. I wonder if that's the same animator that worked with him on that one. But yeah, he's definitely top notch when it comes to animated films, like his whole catalog pretty much.
Yeah, and I just feel like the animation is really well done, the characters. I think we get a little bit of backstory, like for starters, like guys, if you don't want to know too much about the movie, you might want to click out of this episode and obviously go watch it. I really highly recommend watching it because it's that well. But when it comes to this movie, like the main character, right? Which is, yeah. I don't even remember his name. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, Japanese names for me are difficult to kind of pronounce.
Yeah.
So I know it started with an M. Do you remember? I don't really remember. But like, it starts with him, right, as the boy. And it kind of seems like the time period is kind of like what, in the 1930s, around there, like something like that, like during like World War I or something.
World War II. It's like during that time, the war is going on. That's where you see the opening scene of them flaming up houses and pushing, killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it starts in that time period, which is an interesting time period to kind of start off with. It's something about that era where it's like it pays a lot of homage to like the Japanese culture, besides the whole war and people dying and stuff like that. Like I'm saying, during that time period is kind of where, a lot of traditional Japanese culture things kind of took place. When it comes to the main character, it was interesting to kind of see him like jump to the fire and stuff like that. Like, there was like some sort of fire that started initiated, and I don't know how it started actually, but when he seen the fire, I think he kind of knew that his mom was in there. I don't know how, but like he felt like his mom was already in there. And I mean, his mom was in the war, so we don't get too much detail with like the character himself. I mean, with his mom.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because like he dove into the actual fire to see if he can rescue his mom. And he happened to see his mom actually in there, that was actually burning alive pretty much. And I was like, from that moment, this is you can kind of tell like what type of movies you're getting into when there's already like some sort of lost or something like that,
right? And it kind of goes to like the actual director of this, Miyazaki. He lost his mother. You can see a lot. He put himself in the main character's shoes and how he.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he actually went through something similar in real life when World War II was going on and when he lost his mother.
That's nice. That's what a way to kind of like really do. That's very creative, actually. Because what better way to kind of connect with the character to take some actual parts of your actual life to put them in there? That's real unique.
Yeah, you can seriously see his life bled throughout this film, like certain things he's referencing to himself, even within like the main character, Mejido, I think that's his name, Mejido. Mejido, I'm not sure.
Like, we're terrible with names.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, just, like, the way he carries himself is, like, he doesn't show too much emotion. He's, like, really trying to keep all his emotions inside, pent in inside, and puts on, like, a stone face most of the time throughout the film. And you can really see, because that's how Mido is, and that's how a director is in real life. It's, like, he's really strict and really just direct with his emotions.
Yes.
Yeah. Doesn't really emote too much. So I found that interesting that he pretty much, this is like the child version of him, how he sees himself throughout this film.
Which is different, right? I mean, I feel like, do we get to see that in any other of his films? Did we get to see any of that? Because I mean,
not really.
That's what I'm saying. Like he's always conjured up some sort of interesting stories between, you know, each film that he made. But yeah. I feel like with this one in particular, since, you know, this is supposed to be his actual last film, quote unquote, we don't know exactly if it's going to be, but if it is, like, what a way to kind of wrap things up. You know what I mean? Like, right.
Yeah, because most of his films are like, the protagonist, like the main character, is typically like a little girl or a girl. For some reason, he likes to use like an innocent girls for his main characters, but in this one in particular, it's a guy. So
yeah.
I believe his last film was a guy too. That was supposed to be his last one, but this one is like more like literally it's him as a kid.
Yeah.
It seems like he based it off of.
And so. I think, you know, when you're looking at animation, you're not really thinking, like, the visuals is probably the first thing that everybody's going to probably cling to and say, hey, it looks great. The art style is definitely, because, like, you know, you can kind of see the similarities in any, like, all his other films. That's his style, right? Like, the way they kind of look. So you get to see a lot of, like, similarities between, like, Spirit Away. Like, so if you look at the old ladies that actually take care of, you know, the main character when he gets actually, you know, when he injures himself with a rock, which is, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I got the concept. He wanted to get out of school and stuff like that. But it was kind of like, I mean, I don't know, dude, you could have just like rubbed dirt on your face or something. I don't know. There could have like, or just like scratch your knee or something. Like you fucking decided to take a sharp rock and hit it against your right temple. Like,
gushing out blood,
like, right? Yeah. Like, I'm shocked that he didn't like just instantly die. Like when he put that much pressure in that spot, that's a real sensitive spot, man.
Yeah, but I guess that he's that desperate to get out from being bullied in school, like as a new kid or whatnot.
Well, yeah, he didn't. You could tell he wasn't like too fond from, you know, having to see his mother's death, which is a rough experience for any child at his age. I don't even think we even got at his age, right? Like, I think he was like, if I had to speculate, he's probably like 12, like around there, right? Like,
maybe like 10 or 12,
somewhere. Yeah, around there. Which is rough for his age, for sure. But you know, he was not that, I guess you would say, open to his new life that his dad, you know, wanted for him. You know what I mean? Like, because his dad owns a company. So, you know, he already has like, and you know, back then, you know, if you own like, you know, a company, any company, you know, if it's actually producing a lot of like whatever it is, like if it's products being sold or whatever you're selling, it's, you know, back then it was, you get to actually make a lot of money quicker. Because, you know, the value was a lot lower than it is how it is today, and obviously.
Right.
So he was kind of like the rich kid that wasn't really receptive to his lifestyle. And that's kind of rough for any kid his age. Then the thing is, like, so the sister, because I thought that was interesting, because his dad not marries, but it gets with the sister of his wife, his ex-wife.
So
she looks a lot like his mother. And
yeah,
you know, I at least he was respectful. Like he wasn't like this douche that always that treats like, you know, whichever woman that comes after them. Because, you know, as a child, like you're probably thinking like, I don't know who the fuck this is. I kind of want to get them out of my life. I hate you. Get away from me. You know what I mean? Like. But he wasn't like that towards her. He actually was just very respectful. But
yeah, I think it made it more comfortable for him knowing that it's probably his aunt, I believe, because that's his mom's sister.
Right.
You know? So maybe that made it more comfortable for him to adjust to that.
Yeah, so it was. So if that was his aunt, that's what made it weird, because like when she was like, when she was like, you're going to have a little brother. I was like, yeah, this is weird. Like,
Yeah, that's technically gonna be his cousin, yeah. Like, in a way. But at the same time, it is his brother
because it's from dad. Yeah. That's weird, bro.
That's pretty crazy.
Isn't it? I don't know. It's a different culture, man.
But it's actually a common thing back then. Well, at least in like foreign countries, like a lot of dads would get married to the same the mom's sisters or their cousins. Like, it was like a tradition back then.
That's so weird.
Just to keep it inside the family. But yeah, it's crazy.
But yeah, man. I mean, I think you know, when things started to really like kick off was you know, obviously when you met the, and we're saying Huron, but I think it's Huron or something like that. The way that they kind of say it in the movie is kind of differently. It's not Huron.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So I meant to say this in the beginning. The original title to this in Japan is called How Do You Live, which I think is a more fitting title for the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
The American title, for some reason, they wanted to call it The Boy and the Heron, but...
Well, because we're a lot more slower, yeah.
But that makes more sense for how the overall story, well, How Do You Live, for more fitting title.
Well, I typically think that, you know, I think, like, they try to always change, because it's not the first time. They always do that when it's actually a movie from Japan or another foreign country that's being imported over here. It's they feel like they have to change the title to be more appealing, I guess, to us. Right. And it's kind of like sometimes the original name really sticks with the actual art itself, right? Like, wouldn't you want it to kind of still remain the same? Yeah, like, exactly. I wouldn't want to change that. Like, that should be, you should just accept it the way it is.
Yeah.
But
and even in the promotion, like, they didn't really promote it. They actually wanted to go the route of not having any kind of ads or commercials for, like, showing the previews of the movie over there. Over here, they showed, you know, most of the trailers and everything. Because he wanted to keep it under wraps and surprise, and especially it being his possible last film. But, it's a totally different way of rolling out a film versus over there.
So, when he met the bird... The bird stuck out. The bird stuck out to me. I just felt like it was kind of like a weird fucking animal. Like, I mean, I don't even know exactly what type of bird it is, to be honest with you. I think it's like a pelican or some shit.
Yeah, a pelican.
Oh, okay. All right. The really unique colors. I like the saturations of the colors and everything on the bird, but.
Yeah,
the bird, I don't know, at some point it was like kind of creepy looking, and the reason why I say that is because of the eyes look all like fucking red and shit, like it's like not red but like yellowish, and it kind of looked like it was like like when it started to talk, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because they had like human teeth and the gums was
you couldn't really see what was in his mouth at first. It just looked like, you know, it just looked pink. I was like, is there somebody else within the bird? Like,
right. You can kind of tell from the poster, too. You see, like, a little eye hiding inside the mouth.
Yeah.
It's kind of hinting at it.
You know, so I don't know. Like, at first, you know, we weren't really, like, I wasn't really sure, like, what exactly was the purpose of the bird. Like, we know that he was trying to reach out to him, but he was trying to, like, communicate with him, saying like, yo, you know lure him into this, I don't know, this kind of world where, you know, time, space and everything is different. So when he did that, I was confused, because like maybe his mom was actually still alive. That's what made me believe like the bird is actually his friend. Well, I'm not gonna spoil it, but you know, we're going in like a line,
right?
But you know,
I initially thought he was like a villain or something. Like,
I really thought he was like kind of trying to lure him into like a trap or something, or you know, the way that he was trying to teleport him with the frogs being on top of him and stuff like that. And you know, the lady of the house, you know, is auntie, I guess you would say. You know, she's trying to protect him from, I guess, being in that other world. You know, because I feel like the parents knew about, well, they didn't know too much about it. Like, they know of the castle. They knew that something was in the castle, but they don't know what goes on within the castle. Like, they didn't know any of that.
I think the main people that knew was those old ladies. Like, one of the old ladies, like, told the tale of the urban legend of the castle.
Right, because they've been around. Right, because they were around for, like, I wouldn't say centuries, but, like, they were around since, like, the old man.
Right. You know? Yeah, so it's interesting to see that all the animals that kept trying to lure them in back to the castle. It's kind of creepy the way the frogs were talking to them and the other animals were like, come with me, trying to
lure them in there, right?
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing in that kind of way, uncanny.
Yeah, so then, you know, we decide to, you know, man, just to sum it up, I guess you would say, because I feel like we'll be here all day talking about it, but just to, like, to sum it up, like, you know, to take bits and pieces from, you know, this movie in general, like, the story really, really did stick, like, it really resonated with, you know, with itself, because the main concept of the story was just kind of, like, trying to, like you said before, I think you nailed it off air, where you was like, it's more about kind of like trying to get through that pain of losing his mother.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like the mourning of his mom.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to work through it mentally, it seemed like.
Because I feel like most of it, like you said, I think it's a conspiracy, but we don't even know if that's the truth. Like, if he really knocked himself out with the rock, like, technically he's probably still in bed and probably thinking like none of that stuff ever happened.
Right.
Which would make sense, but at the same time, I mean, the stories that this man makes all the time, like, they're just way out there. They're way out there.
Yeah, it's kind of, you can tell, it's like, they even quoted Alice in the Wonderland. One of the characters actually took a quote from, like, one of the, I forget that cat's name, the purple cat in Alice in Wonderland, but one of the characters actually took a quote from it, and you could tell he was inspired from Alice in Wonderland, the way half of the movie is like taking place in reality, and then like the second end of it is like takes place inside the castle with all this fantastical imagination, dreamlike stuff happens. And it kind of, the way I've interpreted that world of being, once he enters into that dimension, it kind of came off like an afterlife, or like the way he's seen like his past relatives of his mom in there as a kid and his great grandfather. It's like, it kind of represents like the afterlife, and like the way you see those little ball spirits that get eaten by the pelicans after them trying to survive inside that world. It's like, it seems like it's like a more spiritual world, kind of like spirit away.
That's what I'm saying. Like I feel like some of it kind of like took, like resembles a lot of like the events that happen in Spirit Away.
Yeah, even like a lot of his other past films, like Princess Mononoke and like Castle in the Sky, you can see like a lot of like references from all his other movies put into one, into this movie. A lot of people caught on to that, this being like his magnum opus of him doing like
his style. Like, he'll take bits and pieces from his last movie and then put it in here, but then add like a little kind of twist onto this new version, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, pretty much like little Easter eggs for like his fans of his past works to see, which I thought was pretty cool for him to do too, thinking that it might be his like last film.
Because unfortunately I think like this film, I feel like you will have to watch it like a few times to kind of understand it a little more. I feel like one time is probably not enough.
It's like a lot of metaphors and like a lot of, it's a lot of things you can miss if you just blank, you know. It's a lot going on once you get into that dream world he goes into.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of the voice acting in this too. There's like a lot of big actors in this.
Yeah, like, I love the, to be honest, I wasn't even sure about like what really, like what, who played who. Because I couldn't tell.
Yeah, like they really transformed their voices, like a lot of them. They had Batista in there playing as one of the birds that you see later on in the film, the bird captain.
Oh, the king bird.
The king, yeah. The king, I mean, yeah.
And which makes sense because he's a big dude. He's a big fucking bird. Makes sense.
Right. Well, in a full plane as the dying bird that you see later on that could catch the little spirits. And that was a little cool little side story too. Like the pelicans, in order for them to survive, they had to eat those little ball spirits that came from that realm. And it's kind of like an ecosystem of them having to survive in a way. But it's like if they don't, they die off from not having that energy from the spirits, which I thought was like interesting to see in that world. And even like the way that the dimension was introduced, like he has, it's like a bunch of different doors you can go through that go into different time periods. I thought that was interesting too, that like even when those birds or those creatures were going through the door, they would turn back to normal versus when they're inside their dream world, they're like so giant and like mystical looking, you know. I thought that was a different juxtaposition of showing the two worlds at the same time. That's cool to see.
What did you really think about the film in general? I know I didn't really talk about mine too much, but like I kind of want to know yours.
Oh yeah, it's like I was saying, it seemed like the entire story was really telling his way of like mourning for his mother, and like you could see like in the front of the beginning of the film when she died in the flames, and then later on you see her younger as a kid and she has like flame fire powers, you know. You see her in the distance when he comes across like this other character, which I wish this is the reason why I want to see it again, because it seemed like that one lady that helped him out when he was sailing against the sea, and it was like some pirate looking lady, and she was like helping him like find his way to his aunt, you know.
Yeah, she was dope. She was cool as hell. I like her character.
She was. Yeah. But it seemed like she had like a lot to do with, I don't know, like his past too. Like I don't know if she was like in his past life in some kind of way, knowing like this is like a realm that's related to him. So I'm curious to see if I'll watch it again if she's like related to him somehow. I don't know if I can pick up on that. But yeah, it's like a lot of it was show like his grandfather as like a time god in a way, like controlling this whole dream world of like with these little blocks of like representing tombstones, like memorial stones of like past people, and like controlling the time through that way of keeping the balance of time and space with that big rock that is above him that he was in that show with.
Which we still don't even know like where it came from. That was the thing. Yeah. Like, I just know that it came from like outer space, and
oh, you know what? That now that I'm really thinking about it, that rock looks like the same rock that he hit himself with. Like, it just looks like a bigger version of that. I wonder if that represents the rock he hit himself.
It did look like it. It did look like it.
You know what? I'm really thinking about it. I wonder if that was the same rock. Like, if I look back at that rock he hit himself with, I just thought of that now.
It didn't know that because, like, as you really look, because it got smaller actually. Because from what, when we seen it when it first dropped down, it was like this huge kind of like rock that came like it had holes in it and stuff like that, like different kind of portals. And you know, it didn't look like how the way it did when we were seeing in front of the old man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because they both had like that sharp edge to them, like they both was like pointed, like the way they were shaped.
That does make so, that does that kind of raises the eyebrow. It definitely does.
Yeah, that makes me curious now. Like I wonder if I go back and see it, like if that's like the same rock that's above his grandfather in that town room, it's a bigger, that'd be cool to tie that all in together. Like that'd be a cool concept to mess with. But
absolutely,
yeah. But yeah, this it's like very metaphoric when they out of like all his films. That's what I really gained out of this one, especially, that stood out to me. It's like this one is like a lot of metaphors, and it's not like really direct when it comes to a narrative, And a lot of people I noticed online was they kind of disagreed with it because they're so used to the way he's telling, he tells stories in his other films. And but this one is like very like open ended. It's not like really direct of what it's trying to tell you in the story. And I think he did that on purpose to really have you like interpret it whichever way you, you know, imagine it. Because it's a lot of imagination to play some part when it comes into when he goes into that dream world. So it seemed like it was just him mourning over his mom and trying to get over that hump of him actually finding out who his mom was when she was a kid and going on that adventure with her, finding the aunt and everything. But the one thing I didn't really get is the purpose of his aunt going to that place in the first place. Like I was wondering why
does she wander into the actual rock? Right, correct. I was confused on that too. And then I was confused on that. And then the part where she was actually laying in the bed, and you know, the paper kind of like snakes were kind of like protecting her or something like that. What I didn't get about that one was the way that she kind of changed like her persona. Like she changed it as soon as like he was trying to save, like, you know, he was like, yo, we got to go back home. We got to get out of here. And right. She was like, no, I hate you. Like, where did that come from? Like, I was confused on that.
Yeah, it's kind of like she was possessed at some point, like while she was inside that room. Like she was like possessed by something. She was so pissed off that she was like trying to, I believe they called it like a birth room, like a room, because she was like pregnant during the time when she went inside that castle.
Right. She wanted to have the baby over there, actually. Yeah.
Right. But it just, yeah, I wonder what made her so destined to go there instead of like having it inside the regular world, you know? That really makes me want to watch it again as well too.
That's what I mean. Like I feel like you gotta watch this. I wouldn't say like a few times, but I would say definitely more than once if you want to try to understand like the story.
Yeah, and I think those paper things, because I know in Japanese lore, like a lot of times they use like paper as like sealing for spirits, like protecting to keep spirits like sealed away. So I think that's where that room represented with the paper snakes and everything, of like sealing, I guess, whatever was possessing her inside that room when she was trying to give birth. That's just my interpretation of what I'm thinking, you know, just going off a bit of Japanese lore. But yeah, that's the one question I really had about the film. It's like, why did she want to go in there to have a kid? But yeah, it seemed like it was kind of him coming to grips of the afterlife. It seemed like overall to me, that's what this movie was about.
I thought what was definitely interesting was so we did get a little bit of insight on the old man. I mean, it seemed, and it was kind of confusing at first too when we started seeing like a little bit, like when they were explaining his story and he was saying like he kind of went insane from reading too much books. I beg to differ. I think that's a fucking fantastic thing, and we need to start doing that more nowadays. But right. Hey, so he just drove himself nuts, I guess. And then I guess like when he stumbled across like this rock, that's when he decided, like, you know, I think he tried to build this like kind of building or any like the castle around the rock, so that way that it's actually like sealed off, I guess, from anybody kind of entering the area. But what was interesting was like when he went in there, I guess he's been in there for centuries or something like that. I wouldn't say centuries, but like years and years, I guess. I don't know how much time has gone by. Like he's like Father Time in this kind of universe.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was interesting was, I guess, like it was just his time, and he tried to get the main character to take his place. And in a way, it was kind of saying like, you know, the creator himself wanted to be replaced, and, you know, he can create the world the way that he wanted to. The way that, you know what I mean? Like, that's why he was confused at the end when the main character chose. He was like, I'd rather go back to that world because it's where my friends are and my family, and You know what I mean? Like, I'll take it for what it is. But, you know, the creator is like, but that world is like imperfected. Like, it's so much wrong with it. It's dying inside or something like that. And I think it was just interesting to kind of just see, like, you know, somebody that created its own world, you know, being kind of like taught in a way that's like, look, you've been in this world for this amount of time, but in the end, like, I'm not gonna just kind of run away from everything I just left. I'd rather go back and deal with it rather than kind of create this other world where most of the things within it doesn't really mean anything. You know, like, it's just a fantasy kind of tale world. You know, it's kind of like the Pan's Labyrinth.
That's a good comparison.
Right, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's just a world within a world, but, you know, like, it didn't matter to him. He wanted to really, like, he was actually just really trying to get his aunt out of there. But in the process, like, you know, he did manage to see his mother, which was a, you know, kind of like a, you know, it was a kind of a great experience for both hands, really, because, you know, he didn't really get to say much. I mean, we didn't see much of him actually, you know, his relationship between him and his mom. So this was what we got from, you know, from that experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great point, too, because it seemed like, like you said, it's like, instead of like living in this dream, he wanted to set himself back into reality and really do what he was grieving with, as far as like what he went through in the beginning of the movie.
Right.
The loss of his mother. And yeah, it seemed like, I could see a lot of Hideo Miyazaki, and that's another reason why I think he put himself into this movie, because like even the grandfather character, it seemed like that was like the retirement version of himself he was putting into that character as well. It's like he wanted to pass on the baton to like maybe his son or like somebody else that's part of his company of Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
Of like, it's time for me to, you know, wrap this up and pass on these stones to somebody else of taking on this dream I had. But instead, you know, the world falls apart and he goes back to reality, you know, and it goes back into his hands, which you can see him, the actual director, he takes it back to his own hands and he still wants to take control of his own films, which is like, it's such a great way, like, to wrap things up of showing what he wanted to do with his art and his way of telling a story, which is like meta in a so many ways.
Yeah, I definitely felt like, yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's just seeing like how it just panned out from strictly just a boy, right? Strictly just a boy, just, you know, kind of trying to live a normal life after dealing with death, and then going on this end, like kind of going on this path where it's like, It's about really self-reflection, if you think about it. It's like in a way of self-reflecting on like how he's kind of been dealing with his own problems. In a way, this was kind of like very therapeutic for him. You know what I mean? Like, what a way to kind of have therapy, you know?
Going through like a whole dream world where these birds are trying to eat you alive and like,
Speaking of
those little bird things, those things were kind of creepy, like the way they were trying to eat them and try to capture them.
Yeah, I mean, when he was like dying, like the one that was dying on the ship, like it was like, what type of pelican is this thing? Like, it's like, it has like this weird kind of like breathing fucking neck thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird. It's not even a fucking pelican. Birds are the thing. I feel like they should have put Big Bird in there. Like, you know,
yeah,
I just feel
so
like
birds in here. Bird shit, birds, different types of birds, and even the heron himself, the guy that we eventually see that's living inside the pelican, and he comes out, he has a big ass nose, and he's like I guess he's like some kind of troll or something.
I didn't get the whole though. I didn't get the whole you know, when he actually shot him with the bow and they actually went on his beak.
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh,
I didn't right. get, like, they had to plug that for him to get his powers back. I was what?
Oh yeah, I think they did that because he couldn't really fit inside the bird again, because he was like, he couldn't stuff himself inside. So it didn't fit well when that hole was there, I guess.
I wonder how the bird is surviving in the fucking...
Yeah, I'm like, is it the bird alive? Is it his own thing, or is it just like a skin that he wears? That's what I was trying to figure out.
I feel like it's a
too.
Skin, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a way of armored with the hair on.
Yeah, and towards the end, it was kind of confusing too, because, not confusing, well, sort of, for me at least, a lot of things don't make sense. I'm a little slow. But, you know, after the place got destroyed, like, you know, after the place had got destroyed, we started seeing, you know, you've seen the Huron actually, and he was like, he's like, do you still remember everything that just happened? And he goes, yeah, I do. And he goes, well, why, how is that possible? Because, you know, typically, like, I'm guessing, like, I don't know if this has been done before, but he was kind of saying, like, well, you're supposed to already have forgotten about what happened. So are you hanging on to, like, some sort of charm or anything? It was like, you know, he had the old lady in one piece of block from the blocks that he had supposed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it to me, it was kind of like, what was that part? You know, that's why I'm a little confused about right there. It's like, so he hanged on to that as a memory, but
yeah,
what was he supposed to do with it?
Yeah, I think that kind of represented like his own memory, like in a way, like those stones, because those are like memorial stones. That's what the guy at time said.
He yeah.
said like, these are people that passed away, and like to keep time in line, to keep those blocks, you know, balanced on each other. And I think that one block that he kept is like a resemblance of that world, of that memory of like him learning that lesson from that, you know, that journey he went on. I think that's what that represents as, just like a life lesson, pretty much, of like what he knows from his mom, the lost memory of his mother.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's what at least I interpreted it as, like a memorial stone of his mom or something like that.
Yeah.
Just some a grieving thing. But yeah, that's what I mean by it. It's like so much symbolism in this movie. It's like a lot of things symbolize something and represent something else that may be like something minor in the real world. You know, I don't know.
How would you rate it?
I'd probably give it, I'm struggling between a 9 and an 8. It's like somewhere between there.
That is, yo, bro. You've been shocking me lately.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this film. Like, I would say it's maybe my favorite film of this year.
This year, in general. Yeah.
Yeah. 2023. It's between that and Godzilla. It's like, damn it.
They're both good films, man.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, I might give it a high 8. I probably have to watch it again to really give it like a true score, because I feel like there's a lot of stuff I still have to catch in the middle.
Yeah, I think it should be on, like, I think you said they partner up with HBO, right?
Oh yeah, they got a lot of his past films on there on HBO.
So
Max,
we might see this in the future probably on there.
Oh yeah, probably. Probably 2024 sometime there.
Oh yeah, I say March around there.
Yeah,
because it just came out this month, so it takes like a month or two for it to go on streaming services.
Right.
Yeah.
What would you give it overall?
For me, I'm gonna go ahead and say a 7. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like it's still like I feel like because I was a little just confused on like a little bit like on some things when it came to like the ending, and it makes sense of him trying to chase that, like going to the world, you know, him dealing with his mom's death. Like a lot of it does make sense, but some of it to me just doesn't. And that's why I kind of feel like I need to kind of just give it like a medium, like a high medium.
Right.
But it's because of the visuals, and I really love the artwork of it. I love the atmosphere of the characters, like the characters, the setting, the placing. Oh, that's what I wanted to mention too. Like, I feel like this might increase it to 8 because I love the sound effects within everything that does in the movie, like the footsteps, the drinking of water.
Definitely. Yeah,
yes, the wood cracking, crackling, the leaves kind of like blowing in the wind. Right. You know, the Foley artists, if I had to speculate, they definitely did use a Foley artist on this project, because I mean, there's, like you said, they kept a lot of things traditional when it had came to this film. So if a Foley artist, I'm not sure how they do it in film now, but there's like a couple of differences when it comes to, like, you know, how to do sound effects, because you could just get away with sound effects on like through digital. But I think nothing really takes away of actually being a Foley artist, because at least like they're the ones getting like actual materials of what's being presented in the movie. So if it's snow, they're going to get something that kind of resembles like a snow mush if you're stepping on snow, or if it's, you know, you going through leaves or opening a door, like they're recording most of the things, like they'll try to match that sound the best way they can. And I just think, like, if you pay attention to detail, like for an anime film, it is really like really, really like down to the nail.
That's like a motif of his, like a tradition that he does draw.
He's very precise. Like,
yeah. In fact, I believe, I'm not sure if he did it in this film, but I heard like some of his past films, he even used like human, like voice actors to even do like the sound effects for like the wind and stuff like that. Like he wouldn't use like, you know, like engineered sounds, like he actually used like voice actors, the sound of like them just walking or like them breathing, and which is
gonna get a lot more of that kind of sound, like that is supposed to be matching what we're seeing.
Right.
I feel like that's a lot more traditional, and it makes a lot more sense when you do it that way. Versus, yeah. I mean, I don't want to go ahead and put like a lot of films on blast, but I feel like there is a lot that just do generic, like not a generic, but like a common fucking sound effect on, like, because there's a lot of things that are just AI, you know, that you could just use like fucking sound effects from anything, YouTube, you know, already presets already built into like machines that you already have, like sound pads and stuff like that. So. Yeah, like there's just so many ways to get sound effects where it's like, why go that route? I'm not even sure how much it costs to actually. I guess it depends on like the budget itself on the film, but you know, because I don't know if it costs a little more to get a Foley artist versus the freaking, you know, just getting a regular kind of sound effect on a computer. So, I just feel like that's what probably would get it up to A for me. It's just because of the sound effects. The sound of music is great too.
I forgot to mention that too. It's like one of my favorite soundtracks from his, like, both the film. Yeah, like a beautiful score. Like the way some of the scenes played out with the music is like really well done.
So I feel like because of the music and sound effects and stuff like that, I would say I'll give it an 8. Story wise, I feel like I would give it a 7.
Okay.
That's what I would say. Visuals, because I feel like I don't want to feel like that's the problem. Like, we don't dig deep enough. Like, visuals is good, right? Like, that's the first thing that we always see when we first see it. That's always great, but you got to appreciate a lot more other factors when we're talking about a film, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I mean, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it's a 9 because of the way it looks. I would say the way it looks would be either a 7 or 8 too. Mm-hmm. Because it does look good, but I appreciate all the other work that was put into this film.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, each piece plays a big factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the score.
Exactly.
The narrative, the story, the acting, the environment, you know. All of it comes to play. But yeah, this definitely was a great film from him, and hopefully it's not his last, but if so, this is definitely a good cap off of his entire lineage of movies that he had made thus far.
Right. You know?
I definitely would love to see more of what he does, or if not, you know, definitely a good finale.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's how we feel, guys. Definitely like, subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, all the platforms. Follow us on Twitter if you can. And, you know, we'll keep you up to date on actually a lot of content that we're going to be covering pretty soon. And hope you guys enjoy your holidays. And, you know, New Year's is coming up, so Happy New Year to you guys as well if we don't get an episode out by then. And, you know, we'll bring some more content coming to you guys for next year. All right.